true that somebody else killed his wife in order to ruin him. Silence him permanently by hanging. You just said it won't save the subject of the book, Pitt pointed out. Daniel was losing control. He couldn't back out now. The man he has exposed is Victor Narroway. Pitt looked incredulous.
What?
Victor Narroway, Daniel repeated.
Exposing him as what?
Pitt asked incredulously.
Head of Special Branch? For God's sake, everybody who mattered knew that.
And Victor's dead. He hasn't got any family to pay, or whatever this man wants. He's not looking for money. He's just inherited a whole fortune. Lands, money, and a title. But it isn't only Narroway. This was hard to say. Pitt didn't seem to have understood it. Pitt waited, his face paler now, the tension apparent in the way he sat. Graves has painted him as corrupt. Daniel swallowed. He says Narroway had a file of information on people that he used to blackmail them to give himself more and more power. And he also said... This was even harder than he had foreseen. He felt as if it would make it sound believable just by repeating it. He says that Aunt Vespasia slept with all sorts of people to get information, personal information about important people, that she was a high-class whore. He watched Pitt's expression move from incredulity to understanding, to fury, then to grief.
I'm sorry, Daniel began.
Pitt put up his hand, as if that could silence Daniel. I had to tell you, Daniel said, his voice shaking with emotion. And he says you use the same file of names to keep power. He trailed off. He couldn't repeat Graves's words about Pitt. Even to say it sounded as if Pitt had to justify himself to Daniel. He couldn't do it. He is suggesting that someone in Special Branch killed Ebony Graves to keep anyone from publishing Graves' book. I have to prove that's not true. It's his only defense. And they're going to hang him in barely over 2 weeks. I don't believe it, but that isn't good enough.
Pitt seemed to be stunned.
He blinked once or twice. Did he say where he got his information?
No.
He knows I'm your son. He seemed to take some pleasure in that. So he used it to manipulate you, or to have some sort of revenge on you because you didn't save him?
No. He hasn't been home since I came onto the case. I'm only a replacement.
What difference does it make that he hasn't been home? Daniel was doing this badly, and Pitt was refusing to understand. Daniel wanted to shout at him that he couldn't evade it like that. Why wouldn't he see that this was real? He took a deep breath. I went to his house, spoke to his servants, who don't like him very much. They didn't actually say so, but it's there. They don't seem to have any trouble believing that he killed his wife. I don't know whether I believe he did or not. But Mr. Ford Croft owed him a debt of honor, and we have to... That was not what he meant. Start again. I have to investigate it, he said desperately. He hasn't written the complete book yet, but he's done a lot of it. A lot of the preliminary work and a draft of the complete manuscript. And I don't know who his publisher is yet, and I don't know how much they know. His voice was rising in exasperation. I've got to see if it's a credible defense. Somebody, anybody, might have tried to silence publication by framing Graves. He went on. As he says, if he wanted to kill his wife, he could find a far better way of doing it so he wasn't the only suspect. And he could make it look like an accident, and no one would be the wiser. As it is, it's obviously murder because she was disfigured afterward.
Yes, all right, Pitt said quickly.
I see. And considering the material, the suspicion naturally falls on Special Branch. Narroway has no relatives, and Vespasia's are her grandchildren, who are largely abroad. And they're not likely even to have heard of this, and less likely to do anything, so... violent. And so... futile. It's to ruin Special Branch, Daniel said. And you.
Oh?
A black humor lit Pitt's face for a moment, and vanished. What do these notes say about me? Daniel didn't answer. Pitt's voice was... uneven. Daniel, what do they say about me? Daniel felt the room sway around him. He clenched his teeth and breathed in deeply. That you're no better than Narroway. That you'll do anything for power,
even cover up murder. He waited, watching his father's expression as it changed from bewilderment to a flash of understanding, and then ill-concealed distress. The silence prickled for a moment, then Pitt spoke.
And does he say whose murder this was, or only that I covered it up?
No, except that it was a woman and it was very violent.
Why didn't his father deny it?
Why was he asking questions? He must know. It was in his eyes, in every hesitation in his voice. There couldn't be more than one incident like this, surely. He tried to speak, but his voice wouldn't come.
Daniel cleared his throat and began again.
Do you know what he's talking about?
Instantly, he wished he hadn't asked.
It was already too late to take it back.
He sat while the silence washed around him like waves.
Yes, Pitt said at last. But I don't know how Graves came to know anything about it, or to think he knows.
Daniel was stunned.
He fought to remain calm.
I've only read his notes. I have a draft of the manuscript with a lot of notes in the margins and crossings out. I haven't had time to read it.
I don't want to.
Unless it wasn't Graves who killed his wife, and I can raise a reasonable doubt.
He heard his own voice as if it was someone else's.
I know, Pitt answered before Daniel could think how to finish.
If you can, you must. You must be true to your word and your obligation. I would never expect anything less from you.
Daniel flinched. Pitt didn't often speak of honor or duty. It was implicit in everyday life, something that didn't need to be given words.
Daniel wished he had not come, hadn't raised anything of the issue. But it was too late to go back.
He was now questioning his father's honesty, which meant that he was questioning his whole life. He couldn't deny it.
Pitt was speaking again.
I know what Graves is referring to, and in essence, what he said is true. A man of high power in Portuguese politics, Luís dos Santos, here in London at the time, had a violent quarrel with his wife in their home. It ended tragically. He struck her hard and killed her. So yes, it was murder. He was a violent man.
You helped him?
Why? Daniel demanded.
It was 2 years ago, just before the assassination of the King of Portugal.
What does that have to do with it?
It was a very turbulent time in Portugal.
It still is. I hope there won't be any more, but there's a strong chance of another rebellion like the last one, but far worse. There's unrest all over Europe, particularly socialists rising up. I can't say I entirely blame them.
What?
Assassinations? Riots?
I'm not approving of them, Daniel. I'm saying I understand why they rebel against poverty, oppression, and a rule that has no fairness and no room to appeal.
And was this man's wife oppressing him? Daniel asked, and then wished he could have left the sarcasm out of his voice.
Should he apologize?
He hadn't intended the rudeness, but the disbelief was real.
You have to follow the exactness of the law, Pitt said.
He too seemed to be keeping his temper with an effort.
I can't always afford the luxury of having what I do dictated by statute. Revolution is essentially about breaking laws.
Murder? Daniel challenged.
He hated this. He wished he'd never begun, but he couldn't leave it now. His father's beliefs were the framework of all he believed himself. Fairness. Innate decency. Following the rules when they suited you, and even more scrupulously when they didn't. It was what his parents had taught him all his life. How could it be changing now? He felt utterly lost.
Daniel. Pitt's voice was sharp.
Daniel looked up.
I didn't kill the woman. I would have saved her if I could, but when I arrived, she was already dead. The man knew too many secrets that he would tell if I let him be taken into police custody and charged, then stand trial. I hated saving him, but the alternative would have cost many lives that I was not too late to save.
Daniel felt hope surge inside him.
He wanted that to be true. Wanted it so badly it was like gasping for air when you had been underwater.
What did you do?
Lie to the police?
Yes.
Did anyone else get blamed?
No,
Pitt said stiffly.
Of course not.
We managed to disguise it to look like an accident. She fell down the stairs.
And what happened to him?
I got him out of the country.
But the assassination happened anyway.
Yes.
And the people whose deaths he would have caused? They are still alive? Daniel asked slowly. Daniel, I'm not trying to change the political situation in other countries, Pitt said patiently. I'm trying to stop the violence from coming here. Half the social extremists in Europe, that is the revolutionaries, are in London one time or another. Spanish, Italian, German, Russian, they feel safe here. Some of them even live here. God knows what they're planning. And I like to know as much of it as I can. That's what Special Branch is about. Safeguarding us against violence, terrorism, change by force. His grimace was something short of a smile. I see. Do you? I think so. Something, anyway. This biography that Graves is writing, it's pretty nasty. I damn well intend to find out, Pitt answered. We should have known someone was writing a biography like this. He must have had to do a great deal of research into it. And if someone at Special Branch answered his questions, I'll need some good excuse if they expect to keep their job now, and an account of exactly what he asked and exactly what he was told. They're going to have to earn their redemption. He pushed his hand through his unruly hair, making it worse. It must have been difficult for you to tell me. Daniel felt a mixture of pity for those accused in Graves's book, guilt that he had told Pitt about it, and fierce longing to be able to do something to help. Mostly, he feared that all the certainties and values in life that made sense, even his own identity, were beginning to unravel in front of him. I'm sorry. Pitt jerked his head up. You'd be a damn sight sorrier if you'd said nothing and passed this case on to someone else. Graves is your client? Yes, but... No buts. You can repeat nothing you know in confidence that is against his interest, Pitt replied. You must investigate this wherever it leads, but if you find out anything that is a threat to the security of the nation, you will tell me. I don't imagine that will happen. If it does, you may have a conflict of interest. Ask Ford Croft. He'll advise you. Would it be against the interest of the nation if you were not able to perform your job? Pitt's smile was bleak. That's a matter of opinion. I hope so. But no doubt there'll be those who think it would be in the best interest of the country if I were to be replaced. A few for whom it would be very much in their interest. His amusement was self-mocking. Daniel didn't know what to say. He would have given a great deal for this not to be happening, for it to be something else he had to tell Pitt, rather than that at least one of his men had let him down. He stumbled for something to say, but nothing came to him that felt honest. There isn't anything you can do, Pitt repeated. Once Graves told you, there was only one thing you could ever have done. He took a moment to think. Tell me, what have you learned since then? I ask because I have to find out who could and should have known about this and why he didn't. Is it carelessness or design? Did someone know and not set it right? And if so, why? Daniel could think of nothing useful to say. It wasn't his fault, and yet he felt as if it were. At every step, he could have paid lip service to the idea of saving Graves from the rope, whether he killed Ebony or not. Except you had to have faith before you hanged someone, that you were right, at least in fact. The morality of it was not yours to judge. What are you going to do? He asked Pitt. Find out where the information came from, Pitt answered. And you're going to help me. I want all the details you can remember of exactly what stories Graves was going to tell. He must have got some details. It's not a story without them. What stories did he tell of Narroway, specifically? Then of Vespasia, something that's not just gossip that anyone knows. Although the days she was gossiped about are long past. Is it first-hand knowledge, or second? And about me? I need to know the dates, I need to know the details. It's ugly. Daniel avoided his father's eyes. The details, Pitt said sharply. If I know the details he has, I can very probably trace it back to the source. The devil of truth is in the details, Daniel. Just what stories do they tell about Narroway? Daniel tried to remember exactly what he had seen in Graves' notes. There was something about a case in Ireland. A man named O'Neill who was betrayed and died. A woman Narroway seduced and then betrayed. Someone else who had betrayed Special Branch and sent you on an abortive trip to France, to Paris. You sure it was Paris? Yes. Interesting. It was Sam Marlowe, actually. Go on. Wouldn't you go to Paris first?
No.
Paris is inland. I took a ferry direct to Le Havre, and then to Saint Malo. Daniel felt a thin trickle of hope, like winter sunlight. And then there was a case about an addicted young man who shot a bystander and blamed the police, and Narraway told you to get him off.
Interesting details. Did they say how I got him off, or why Narraway wanted it?
Narraway wanted to... something to do with the boy's father, who was very important. Daniel struggled to remember more, and could not.
Get me all you can. Copies of Graves's notes, if possible, Pitt told him.
The cases are real ones, but the details are wrong. The boy was dying anyway. All I did was get him into a hospital for the last few months of his life, instead of a prison cell and a death in unbearable pain. And as for his father, I'd have seen the swine in hell with pleasure. But his mother was a good woman. Go on.
Daniel told him all the rest that he could remember, and promised to bring in more detail as soon as he could.
When he finally stood up to go, his mind was racing with ideas. All the facts he remembered, and any others he could add later, might well help Pitt to lead Daniel to whoever had murdered Ebony Graves, and had framed Graves. On orders from someone in Special Branch. And was that person a traitor, or a patriot? Did that depend upon whether Narraway or Pitt himself had acted as Graves concluded? Or was that immaterial? And if it had all happened while Pitt was head of Special Branch, did that make it his fault? Daniel stayed for dinner, even though part of him wanted to leave and think what to do next. First, he must study the material of Graves's book he had taken back to his lodgings. But if he didn't stay, then he would have to explain to his mother why. It would frighten her, and she would see through it immediately if he tried to look as if nothing were going on. He had learned that at the age of 6. She'd known him better than he knew himself. It wasn't completely true now, but the memory was strong, and she could still surprise him at times. At dinner, they sat around the dining room table, not the kitchen as in so many years in the past. Perhaps if he had not been present, it would have been in the kitchen this evening too. Daniel dismissed the whole subject of Russell Graves, and instead told his mother in particular how he had very nearly lost the case for Roman Blackwell, but in the end pulled it out of apparently nothing, like a magician's rabbit out of a hat. They discussed the latest letter from Jemima in New York, and how her husband, Patrick, was faring, and of course, all the details about her two little girls. Daniel left after 9. He hugged his mother, as he always did, and shook his father's hand, feeling the warmth of his grip just a moment longer than usual. It was Charlotte who saw him to the door.
"Come back, if you can't handle it alone," she said very quietly. "We're always here."
"Handle what?" He feigned innocence.
"Whatever it is," she said impatiently.
"I've been a policeman's wife since before you were born, my darling. I know there's something very wrong. Just remember, we are here." She reached up and gave him a quick kiss on the cheek, then almost pushed him out the door. He arrived back at Mrs. Porter Scales, opened the front door as close to silently as he was able, and went inside. There was only the nightlight on in the hall. He went up the stairs, avoiding the step he knew creaked, and into his own room on the next floor overlooking the garden. He saw the message propped up on the desk, written in Mrs. Porter Scales' painfully careful hand. "Dear Mr. Pitt, a Mr. Roman Blackwell left a message for you to visit him. Sincerely, Mrs. Porter Scale." Well, whatever it was would have to wait until tomorrow. Maybe Mercy had heard something interesting. Daniel sat down at the desk and unlocked the drawer. He took out Graves's notes for the book and started to copy them for his father. He studied them also for himself as he went. At last, he knew where to begin. It was nearly 2 o'clock when he finally went to bed.
Chapter 13. Daniel woke with a start, to find sunlight streaming in through the window. His mind had been in too much turmoil to remember to set his alarm clock, and it was already after 8. He might well have missed breakfast, and he had work that couldn't wait. He washed, shaved, and dressed, and hurried downstairs to see if there was anything left to eat. Then he changed his mind. Roman Blackwell's message had been delivered the previous afternoon. He should go straight away. With a hurried apology to Mrs. Porterscale, he dashed out of the front door and then down the street to the nearest cab stand. He asked the driver to take him to Blackwell's address. It was about 9 o'clock and traffic was totally entangled at the busiest time of day. When they arrived, he paid the driver. The fare seemed an exorbitant amount, but the man had found back roads that avoided the worst blockages and left Daniel on the pavement sooner than he would have thought possible. He thanked him and walked up to Blackwell's doorstep. Before he raised his hand to knock, the door opened in front of him. "Well," Mercy said, looking him up and down. She refrained from straightening his tie for him, but only just. "Come in," she invited, stepping back. "You look frazzled." "I'm sorry," Daniel apologized. He mustn't let her see or guess the real reason for his inability to command his thoughts. "I am. I got Roman's message too late to call on you. I was out." She grunted rather than spoke. "Breakfast?" "No, dinner last night, with my parents." "I mean, would you like breakfast?" she offered. "Nobody does their best thinking on an empty stomach." "Am I going to need my best thinking?" he asked, trying to invest some lightness into his voice, and failing. He didn't want more nasty surprises. "Yes," Mercy said simply. She took him through to the kitchen, where Blackwell was sitting at the table nursing a cold cup of tea. "Ah," he said as soon as he saw Daniel. "What news?" His dark face was crumpled as if he were expecting something bad and trying to guess the nature of it before he was told. "You sent for me," Daniel said, sitting down in the chair opposite him. "True," Blackwell agreed. "Ma, you'd better feed him. He looks bloody awful." "I can see that," Mercy replied without turning round. She was already busy with slicing bread and warming up the grill. "And what's your manners, Roman? I'm still your mother, and don't you forget it." Blackwell smiled and his face lit with genuine amusement. "My one reliable pleasure in life is baiting Mercy. She never fails to bite." "Rubbish," she said. "Balderdash. What have you found out so far?" Blackwell asked Daniel. "I think I can add to it." "A lot," Daniel replied, conscious of telling Blackwell less than the truth. But Blackwell admired Pitt so much, he wouldn't want to know about the Portuguese murder and the compromise Pitt had felt he had to make. "But without proof it all amounts to nothing," he added, refusing to give Graves's manuscript the credit of belief. Daniel felt a little like a moth pinned to a board. So piercing was Blackwell's gaze. "Bad, eh?" Blackwell asked. "You don't care if Graves hangs." "He deserves to, if he did that to his wife. And by all accounts he's a rotten sod anyway, quite apart from whether he killed her or not. So, what's eating at you? Old Ford Croft going to throw you out if you can't rescue Graves? Or are you up to rescuing Kitchener, or whatever his name is?" "Kitteridge," Daniel corrected. "He's looking for holes in the law." "Well, if he can't find a hole in the law, he's an ass. It's as full of holes as a sieve," Blackwell said in disgust. "Some you could drive a coach and horses through, but none that will save Russell Graves." "Why does Ford Croft want to? Have you worked that out yet?" "It's a debt he owes. An old occasion when Marcus let Graves' father down. It weighs on him," Daniel replied. "So was his father a rotten sod as well?" Blackwell's eyebrows rose, giving his face a startled look. "Promise is a promise," Daniel replied, feeling even more cornered. "It's about you, not whoever you made the promise to." He could almost hear his father's voice in his head saying it for him. "Have a cup of tea." Blackwell turned in his seat. "Is that kettle boiling yet?" It was an oblique observation, not a question as to fact. Blackwell turned to Daniel again. "So why do we care so much, and don't lie to me? You're not good enough at it yet to get away with it. Not with me, anyway. Don't think you'll ever be. You care so much, it's got you all twisted up and cold inside like a pig's tail in ice. Why?" Mercy put a fresh pot of tea and a crisp bacon sandwich in front of Daniel. Blackwell sat and listened, his face increasingly grim, while Daniel told him very briefly about Graves' intended book and its exposure of Narroway and Vespasia Cumming Gould, who became his wife. He finished up by admitting the incontestable conclusion that the person most likely to destroy Graves was someone in Special Branch, either Thomas Pitt himself or someone fulfilling his orders. Daniel wanted to choose his words carefully, understanding that his emotion was too strong for him. He didn't know anything about the book, he said, and then realized how incompetent that made Pitt seem. He should have. Some of his own men must have access to that kind of information. Blackwell pursed his lips. His disgust was plain, but he didn't waste words on it. Has Graves a publisher for this thing?
He says so, Daniel replied.
Ah, I see. Why is the publisher prepared to set up a book like this and ruin his own reputation? Are there damages the people in it will claim if they're still alive? That's the thing. Most of them are dead. Lord Narroway is, so is Lady Vespasia. He felt a sudden tightness in his throat as he said that. It had not been long ago, and the loss was still fresh enough to hurt. There was a place in his life that felt as if it would always be empty now. Why would the publisher accept it in the first place? He asked, struggling to stop the emotion from drowning him. I'll find out exactly who it is. They are hiding behind the company name.
You may be poking a stick into a hornet's nest, Blackwell warned.
Why don't you let me do it? Sideways, like.
Can you?
Daniel asked. But he was really wondering if Blackwell already knew, or guessed far more than Daniel did. You can do most things if you know the right people to ask. Blackwell smiled, pouring himself another cup of tea. And, of course, the right questions. Daniel thought of a lot of things to ask, and a lot of warnings and rules for Blackwell to follow, or at least not break too badly. But he ended up simply saying, Thank you. He took a sip of his own tea, still very hot, and a bite of the bacon sandwich. It was so good he realized how hungry he was and ate the rest of it before speaking again. Blackwell was following his own train of thought. Wonder what axe the publisher has to grind. He won't be so stupid as to think he could avoid causing a furor. Mercy put down the piece of toast she was buttering. There could be a lot of interesting things to find out about that, she said thoughtfully. And a lot of reasons for doing it, or not doing it. Daniel turned to look at her. The white stripe in her hair caught the light and shone dazzlingly. Then she moved her head and it was shadowed again. Apart from money, what? He asked. Personal revenge? Pretty deep hatred to take revenge on the dead, isn't it? Someone who was too scared to do it while they were alive. Your father's head of Special Branch, right? Mercy said thoughtfully, moving her own slice of toast away from the open door of the oven fire. Yes. His intention would be protecting the reputation of his friends, not protecting his own. It's a good distinction. Oldest trick in the book, she added. He'd see through that, Daniel answered. But as he said it, he wondered if it was true. Real friends fought battles beside you, even after they were exhausted, fought on to protect you. Even if the end was defeat, they didn't leave you. Friends knew your flaws as you did theirs, but stood by you anyway. You laughed together and mourned together, celebrated victories and grieved for losses. Pitt would never let his friends down. Perhaps if they were guilty, he couldn't protect them from the carrion creatures who dared not attack them when they were alive. But still, he would protect what he could. That's what friendship is. Daniel had seen it in his father as long as he could remember. His mother, too. She was even quicker to defend the vulnerable. It didn't often occur to her to wonder if they deserved it. She had defended Daniel when he was wrong, but punished him herself afterward. He smiled at it now, but he had been scared stiff of her anger at the time. He sipped his tea again, and another bacon sandwich appeared on his plate. Thank you, he said appreciatively, and began eating it immediately. We must find out where Graves got his information, starting with those things that are true. Blackwell resumed. There's not much of it true, Daniel said too quickly. Mercy patted him on the arm. Whatever it is, it's the only starting place that we know of. Get those things and you may get the people. And find something we would like to have been true that wasn't. And that's a point to fix the moving pieces. Daniel began to see her meaning. But if we do find out who was giving Graves the information, What good will that do us?
Mercy was absolutely direct.
What good do you want?
Daniel hesitated.
What he wanted most was to prove beyond doubt that his father wasn't guilty of dishonorably concealing a murder, that he had a compelling reason, one that any decent person would understand. Graves had implied that this reason didn't exist. There was nothing to expose if there was such a reason. He knew perfectly well that Pitt would never have sanctioned the killing of Ebony Graves. That was not even a question. Nor would he have intentionally looked the other way while someone else did.
And didn't that amount to the question, in the end, of whether Narraway was guilty of any of the things he was accused of?
Another thought occurred to him. If Narraway was guilty, had the person behind this known that at the time? Had they colluded in it? And did he, Daniel, want to prove Graves not guilty beyond a reasonable doubt? Or did he really want to see him hanged, but with a clean conscience?
Mercy was waiting, watching his face.
Perhaps the last was really the truth, and he wanted to see him hanged.
I want lots of things, he said.
In order? I want to prove Graves killed his wife, and we would be right to hang him. Then, if he didn't, I want to know who did and prove that. And I want to prove that my father didn't.
He stopped. He had said too much already.
Was betrayal really easy as that? A careless word because you couldn't carry the weight of a secret alone.
And you would like it in the next 15 days, Mercy said in black humor.
16, Daniel corrected. His own smile twisted.
15, she repeated. 8 o'clock in the morning, 16 days from now, he'll be hanged.
He didn't bother to argue. He recounted briefly his visit to Graves's house in Herne Hill with Miriam Ford Croft, and what they had observed at the murder scene.
Mercy poured herself a cup of tea and sat beside him.
If what Graves said is true, then Ebony's character has nothing to do with her death. The purpose was to blame Graves and silence him.
Daniel nodded.
That's pretty brutal.
Yes, she agreed.
He thought for a moment, forcing his mind to remain on the immediate problem.
Then why burn her face? That makes it very personal.
All I could find about her, she was a woman who aroused deep feelings, Mercy said thoughtfully, but was more liked than disliked. She fought hard for what she believed in, and she didn't hold her tongue when perhaps she ought to have.
Enthusiast, you know?
If you were enthusiastic too, she's wonderful.
If not, she would be very irritating.
Rather, an irresponsible sense of humor, as one woman put it.
Suddenly her face filled with sorrow, as if the reality had suddenly reached her.
I think I would have liked her.
Blackwell started to speak.
Mercy held up her hand.
I know, she sniffed.
I know to burn someone's face away because they irritate you would not be easy to do. It requires a cold heart, an overbearing need, and something to make it burn.
She looked at Daniel.
And why?
I tried to find something she knew that was dangerous.
Nothing.
It makes no sense.
Daniel drew a deep breath.
Then you think she could have been killed just to cause Graves to be hanged?
Blackwell nodded slowly.
Mercy's told me all she found out.
No one had a reason to kill Ebony.
Jealousy? Yes, maybe.
His face expressed what he thought of that.
Disagreed with her ideas, definitely.
But I'm afraid none of the changes she wanted are likely to happen within the next 10 years anyway.
And then, maybe, nothing will stop them.
If she'd been slashed in a fight, I'd believe it.
But finding a way into her house, when her children were at home, nothing was heard. No noise. No lock picked. No window broken.
And burning her face?
He looked from one to the other of them.
I see, Daniel cut in.
You're right. If it were a personal thing, it would have cleared up suddenly. An attack, a fight, all happening there and then. Not a break into her home, after dark, by someone who left no trace.
And came prepared, Mercy added.
And I found no one who suggested her affairs were more than flirtations.
From what I heard of Graves, I commend her restraint.
I would have gone a lot further.
You would have left him, Blackwell said.
If it had been he who had been killed, I would have understood it, Mercy replied ruefully. She looked across at Daniel. I'm sorry. I know nothing of use. She looked momentarily crushed, and Daniel realized how very much she wanted to repay the debt she owed him for saving Blackwell. He forced himself to smile at her, but it felt artificial. There'll be other times. He leaned back in the chair and looked again at Blackwell. I wish I could believe Graves killed her. It would be so much easier. I could let him hang with an easy conscience. I would have done all I could. He took a deep breath. But I don't. I hear the pain in him now. I see the fear in his eyes. The anger, too. He's desperate not only to save his life, but to right something that isn't fair. Mercy rolled her eyes. You are too soft-hearted for your own good. Defending someone in the law doesn't mean you have to believe they're innocent. But you said yourself, you couldn't find any enemy that hated her with that kind of intensity that... Not among her acquaintances, Mercy interrupted him. I can quite easily believe that her husband could have. If she mocked him, rejected him, made fun of him. Any abilities he might have, he's a proud man, by all accounts. She made a little grimace of disgust. He could well have lashed out at her. You described him as arrogant, condescending. Yes, to me, after he had been convicted and was very afraid, Daniel answered. He would hate me because I've seen him defeated, and whether he likes it or not, he's depended on me to save him. That would scald his pride like acid. And if he failed in the bedroom, and his wife laughed at him, do you not think that that would burn his pride even more than acid? Mercy asked. He would never forget it, and I dare say she would never let him, and he knew that. He would lash out, maybe kill her in one blow. But why the burning? Daniel persisted. Take the smile off her face, Mercy answered with a shrug, as if the answer were self-evident. All this may well be true, but it doesn't answer your problem. Blackwell leaned forward a little. You must find who gave Graves the information for his book. More than anything, you have to save the reputations of people you love. Cover their weaknesses, if they had them, with the privacy we all need. But first of all, make sure that none of your father's men did this. There was no lift of question in his voice. It was a statement of fact. Daniel knew it instantly from Blackwell's face that he understood, and more than that, he saw the gentleness in him. Perhaps he loved Mercy the same way, with the same absence of judgment or condemnation. We've got about 2 weeks, Daniel said. Then we'd better get on with it. Mercy poured more tea as if she was free to start again. What do you need to know? Daniel thought for a moment. Where did Graves get his information, and how reliable is it? Did anyone in Special Branch betray Narroway, or my father, and if so, who was it? I don't think why matters now, and even whether it was deliberate or just carelessness. Trusting the wrong man, drunken misjudgment, a confidence to a lover. We need to find out who, so no one else will be implicated. Blackwell was making notes in what looked to be a script of his own invention. Wouldn't your father do that anyway? Blackwell asked. Yes, but he doesn't have access to Graves. I do. He winced as he said it. The thought of going back to Graves and trying to ask him for information was enough to chill him inside, in spite of the hot tea and the 2 bacon sandwiches. Blackwell gave him a bleak, sympathetic smile, more a grimace, and poised his pencil for the next item. That'll do to start with. Kitteridge is continuing to search for anything useful in the law, Daniel said. There won't be anything in the law, Blackwell dismissed it. Use him for something that matters, for heaven's sake. He's not a fool. He looked at Daniel, meeting his eyes. Don't need to tell him about your father. He'll know anyway. The whole world will, if you fail. Bite the bullet. Daniel heard the faint contempt in Blackwell's voice. He was about to fight back, then realized he had nothing to fight with. You're standing in your own light, Blackwell said. Get Kitteridge to help. Fordcroft is in no position to complain. He got you into this, and you don't need to tell him so. He'll know. Daniel acquiesced silently. And there's one other thing, Blackwell added. You need to find out how they burned her. Dropping a match on her might make a hole in her clothes, but not much more. Even if there was a fire in the grate,
A hot coal would dig deep in the flesh, but it wouldn't have burned her face. Did someone come prepared, or know where to find the means? We need to dig her up and get an expert to tell us what was used. Can this woman of yours, Ford Croft's daughter, do that? We'll never get permission to exhume the body, Daniel said in disbelief. Please God, Blackwell wasn't suggesting they do so anyhow. Roman, we can't go grave robbing. Apart from anything else, the evidence wouldn't stand up in court. That is, if we're even out of prison ourselves and allowed to offer it. Blackwell pressed his hand over his eyes. Please, Daniel, couldn't we have a little sense? We'll get an exhumation order. They'll never give one. The case is closed, as far as they're concerned. They had their evidence. The police surgeon looked at the body, or someone did.
Someone?
Blackwell's eyebrows shot up. I don't know, I wasn't there until the end of the trial, but they won't give us an order. Would this Miriam of yours do it if we can get the body up, legally?
It won't happen.
Blackwell slammed his hand down on the table.
Would she?
Yes, I suppose so.
Fine.
Then leave the exhumation order with me. I'll get one. Not a forgery. Blackwell looked indignant for a moment, then gave a bright smile.
No, not a forgery. It's got to be a real one, so I'll get a real one.
Just go on with what you're doing. I'll let you know when I have it.
A real one, Daniel insisted. He knew Blackwell's forgery skills.
Of course, a real one. There's more than one way to skin a cat.
Disgusting. Daniel's imagination ran riot.
Not a real cat, you fool, Blackwell sighed. When are you going to learn to speak English like an ordinary person?
Mercy put her hand on Blackwell's arm.
Enough, she said gently. The poor boy's in a miserable situation. They're after his father. Just get on with it and speak to whoever you have to.
She turned to Daniel. And you get yourself ready to go back to Graves.
Mind how you watch yourself. When you've got a rat cornered, that's when he'll bite anybody, starting with you.
I know, Daniel agreed.
Thank you for the bacon sandwiches.
Mercy smiled.
There are times when it's the only thing that works.
Chapter 14.
Daniel left Blackwell's house and went straight to the chambers in Lincoln's Inn. He wanted to be able to report in to Ford Croft when he had something to say rather than when he was sent for. Ford Croft was sitting behind his desk reading papers. He looked up as Impney announced Daniel, hope in his face. It faded rapidly.
Good morning, sir.
Daniel stood in front of him.
Ford Croft let the papers fall on the embossed leather surface of his desk.
Good morning. Is it Mr. Pitt? Have you anything else to report?
Yes, sir. But I was wondering if Mr. Kitteridge had discovered anything that would be usable. If not, I might ask his assistance.
With what?
Ford Croft sat upright, shifting his considerable weight uncomfortably in the chair.
That depends on what I discover in the next few days, sir.
I'm hoping Miss Ford Croft will assist me with an autopsy, Daniel replied.
Ford Croft looked startled.
Autopsy? On whom?
With the law's permission, of course. Upon Mrs. Graves.
For God's sake, boy. She's already decently dead and buried, poor soul. If you're hoping Kitteridge can get you permission to dig her up, after the police have already done a post-mortem, you're doomed to total failure.
No, I'm not going to ask him for that, Daniel replied, keeping his voice as level as he could.
But, sir, have you wondered why her face burns so deep?
No, no, I haven't. Can it possibly matter now? What have you found?
Do you really have some hopes Graves is not guilty?
He put his head down and raked through his hair, making it even wilder than before.
God in heaven, boy, that's the last thing you need.
Was it something to do with Special Branch, after all?
He met Daniel's eyes reluctantly, his own filled with pity.
Do I need to take you off this case?
I haven't anyone else free, or I would never have put you in court in the first place.
You're not fit for that yet, and you're not fit to do this.
But I've no one else.
I'm sorry.
No, you don't need to take me off, sir, Daniel said quickly.
And I don't know whether Graves is guilty or not.
He could be innocent, and you owe him the best chance of proving that.
Ford Croft's eyes were round.
Oh, and that's your job, is it? And blame your own father or someone under his command? In the eyes of the public, it comes to the same thing. I'm not going to let you do that. Then let me find the truth. I'm not afraid that my father is behind it. That wasn't entirely true. The sick fear still churned in his stomach that somehow, even in mistaken duty, Pitt would be drawn into it, if only to turn the other way, to disprove evidence of collusion. I'm not, he reiterated, not moving his eyes from Ford Croft's. What are you looking for? Ford Croft said slowly. What do you think there is to find? Miriam says we should find what inflammatory material caused ebony to burn like that, Daniel replied. If it was something that Graves couldn't have had in the house, then it was brought in by an outsider. How did they get in? Who let them in? A servant or Ebony herself? Why the disfigurement? It's extreme. It would take a lot of extra time and care, time he could have used to escape. Sir, there's something here that we don't understand. The prosecution never offered an answer. We might find one, if we don't give up. We didn't cover this at trial, Ford Croft pointed out. Was Kitteridge that negligent? No, sir. We had no other reasonable suspect then, and we tried to find one among their social friends who disliked Ebony Graves enough, but she was actually well-liked, if a little over-enthusiastic, and she had had no affairs that we could uncover. Ford Croft held up his hand. All right. Then if you get permission, which I very much doubt, I shall ask Miriam to perform the autopsy for you. You'll not get any reputable surgeon to do it. She'll not contradict the police surgeon for a start. I'm sorry to ask, sir. Will Miss Ford Croft get into any trouble for it? Ford Croft's eyebrows shot up. Trouble? Miriam? She's even better at getting into trouble than you are. I've no intention of forcing her to do it, but she has no standing or position to lose, and she's damn good at it. Thank you, sir. Daniel gave a brief smile, then excused himself and went out, intending to look for Kitteridge. And he must have time to prepare himself as thoroughly as possible before going back to face Graves again. Daniel found Kitteridge despondent and only half attentive to the solid, leather-bound book he was reading. He looked up at Daniel. If you're hoping for something, I don't have it, he warned. How about lunch? Daniel asked. Can't afford the time. I'll get Impney to fetch me a sandwich. I think there's a damn little point in this. There's no chance on earth that I'll find a precedent here. If you've got to eat, go. I've got to see Graves this afternoon. Daniel cut across him. He was determined to find the source who gave Graves the information linking Thomas Pitt to the Portuguese incident. He was not ready to share any of this with Kitteridge. And I want to talk to you first. I'm very polite about lunch. I'll make it an official request if you like. I'm not in a position to make it an order, or I would. No, you're not, Kitteridge agreed. But perhaps I can oblige you. This whole thing is a waste of time, and personally I'm happy for the bastard to hang. He pushed his chair back and stood up. The usual place? They walked in the brisk wind to the public house and ordered ploughman's lunches, a big crusty piece of bread with pickles, cheese, and a glass of ale. Well, what have you got that's worth disturbing me for? Kitteridge asked hopefully when they'd found themselves seats. I think Graves really could be innocent, at least of killing Ebony, Daniel replied. Kitteridge froze in amazement, his bread halfway to his mouth. But he's still guilty of what, then? You aren't making a lot of sense. This is no time for fairy stories, Pitt. Their lordships of the Court of Appeal take a very dim view of it. No sense of humor at all. I should have warned you. There's nothing funny about this, Daniel answered him. Did you even look at Graves' notes for his next book? Not closely. I glanced at it, and what I saw was rather unpleasant. It concerned a chap called Narraway, who's dead now. And it was pretty scurrilous, but famous men, especially powerful ones, do get grubby things said about them. Was someone else involved? His wife, and probably loads of other people. Do you know who he was? Not exactly, Kitteridge frowned. Why? Head of Special Branch. Oh, God. He stared at Daniel, aghast, as suddenly the reality of this came to him. So we could be looking at treason.
Stupid sod. Are you saying he was to be judicially silenced? Only they got poor Ebony instead?
I don't know. He could have been framed for killing Ebony. In which case, it worked, so far.
Kitteridge looked profoundly troubled.
Why didn't he tell us? It would have been a credible defense. What's the matter with the man?
I don't know, Daniel said unhappily. I've read bits of it, but mostly his notes. If he's selling it by the word, he'll make a fortune.
Who's his publisher?
Kitteridge shrugged.
I don't know. He's keeping that very close to his chest. I had no reason to think it mattered before, so I didn't chase it down.
Not his usual publisher, is all I know. I can look further. It's got to be more use than what I'm doing at the moment.
His eyes narrowed and he looked at Daniel more closely.
There's something else, isn't there?
Daniel was torn. He didn't want to tell anyone, but he couldn't handle this alone.
What if he betrayed his father by telling people who would in turn tell others? His father had trusted him with secrets, never thinking he would repeat them.
Certain, in fact, that he never would.
And believing Daniel would trust him, as he had all his life.
But on the other hand, what if Pitt was destroyed by this because Daniel was too proud and too afraid to trust anyone who could really help?
Pitt, Kitteridge said sharply. We can't fight in the dark. What's the matter with you, man?
What should he say? Daniel couldn't decide. He could not see clearly enough.
I'm not sure what Graves wants, he began.
Well, he doesn't want to hang, I'm bloody sure of that, Kitteridge said tartly.
Start there and move on.
Which means he really thinks Special Branch could be behind Ebony's murder, Daniel reasoned.
Why should they care enough to go to those lengths to protect the reputation of someone who's no longer there?
Kitteridge continued. Then his voice dropped a little and was suddenly gentler.
Or is it worse than that? Is he saying your father engineered it?
And he's covering up something he was involved in too?
Is that what's got you pulling your hair out?
Daniel didn't need to admit it.
The understanding was in Kitteridge's face, which was surprisingly without judgment.
Personal or Special Branch business?
Kitteridge asked.
Special Branch business.
To do with a Portuguese political dissident of some sort, apparently very well connected. There was no point in telling less than the truth now. Killed his wife in a fit of rage, and then panicked.
Asked my father to get him out of the country.
He did. I think because the man knew too much about Special Branch, and knew too much to stand trial over here.
Kitteridge nodded, and then seemed to stop himself before asking anything further, as if resigning himself to the fact that Daniel didn't know any more.
I understand about the political unrest all over Europe. I suppose your father's got to care about that when the dissidents land up in London.
Damn Graves!
Do you think he's got anything to do with politics? Daniel asked, doubtfully.
Not a thing, Kitteridge replied. He's all about money.
I think he's genuinely frightened now, Daniel said.
I wish I didn't, but I honestly think he might not be guilty.
You think it was Special Branch?
Really?
No.
Then we'd better prove who it was, Kitteridge said earnestly.
Can I tell Graves you cannot find any cause for appeal?
Certainly.
Looking is a total waste of time. I'd rather try to help you.
Save the Empire, what?
Daniel stiffened, then saw Kitteridge's face, and realized he was teasing him, and also very seriously offering to help.
Yes, please, he accepted.
Find the bloody publisher.
Daniel went back to the prison, and after the briefest questioning by the guard, was again permitted to see Graves alone. As they locked the door behind him, he sat down in the chair at the other side of the warped table and looked at Graves. Daniel had the sudden, awful feeling that he had glimpsed the corpse Graves could so soon become. Daniel wished he could have brought better news and felt guilty for not having much pity inside him.
What do you want? Graves asked.
His voice was strained as if lack of use had left his throat dry.
I've looked further into the possibility that someone else is creating evidence against you, as you suggested, Daniel began.
Suddenly, Graves' body was rigid.
Who? Who is it? What proof do you have?
I don't have proof of who it is, Daniel answered levelly.
but I believe you that it's possible. The reasons are powerful enough. I'll be able to prove more when I know where you got your information for the book on Lord Narroway. I imagine you kept the sources, since it might be necessary to consult them again. And you must have been aware that there were those who would try to stop you, up to and including causing your disgrace and death.
A believer, Graves said sarcastically. I'd applaud you if I weren't in chains.
Daniel ignored his tone. Why didn't you mention it earlier? It would have given us more time.
Because I didn't kill her. I thought you had enough skill to get me off before the court, Graves said accusingly.
That was nearly a week ago, Daniel snapped.
I thought Kitteridge would find some legal loophole. Has Ford Croft got up off his arse and done anything? He owes me, and he's going to walk away and let me hang.
The hatred was so deep in him, he all but choked on it.
You've still got 2 weeks left.
Daniel disliked him even more, were it possible. He also believed him more. It was a ragged, powerful feeling inside him. Was it worth wasting time answering? Probably not. Where did you get your information? He went back to the original question. Papers, letters, face-to-face interviews, confessions. You think someone betrayed you? Who?
Start with your own father, Graves snarled.
He looked straight into Daniel's eyes, and for a moment, all that was there was hatred.
I did, Daniel replied.
It was almost the truth. In his own mind, he'd refused to believe his father had a part in this.
You can't be as big a fool as you act, Graves retorted. Look at his right-hand man. Who would he trust with his dirty work? Someone who wouldn't betray him, someone who couldn't afford to. With the secrets he knows, there must be a good few of those.
A lot of secrets, Daniel agreed. Why not someone who actually has evidence stacked up against them, not just a note in a book somewhere? Graves faltered for a moment, the absolute certainty draining out of his eyes. Daniel realized his own failure to get names from Graves would jeopardize any chance of saving him, and of saving Pitt as well. Innuendo wouldn't do much harm in the court of law, but certainly would in the area of public opinion. If Pitt lost the confidence of the Home Office, he couldn't do his job.
Give me your chief sources, Daniel said. Give me the ones you will ruin.
Graves hesitated, and then slowly listed half a dozen names to Daniel, who wrote them down. They were all public figures. The damage would be enormous.
It's just word of mouth. Where is their proof? He asked.
Graves sneered at him.
So you can go and destroy it? There's proof. What will you do, sell it back to them? Give it to your father? Or use it yourself to steal my book?
Daniel allowed his disgust into his voice.
There'll be no book if you're dead.
I want to find the one who killed your wife, you fool. Whoever did that to her deserves to... He bit off the end of the sentence. He faced Graves squarely.
Names.
You'll give them to your father, and do you imagine he's going to go through them and give you the killer?
He'll probably give you some men, all right. But are you sure they'll be the right ones? God, you're such a child.
Do you care, as long as you're not hanged? Daniel made it sound like a new question. For a moment, Graves' face was blank.
I thought not. Daniel said sourly. So you imagine you'll question them, and they'll tell you?
Graves asked in disbelief.
I'd leave that to Kitteridge. He's pretty good at it. I'm going to dig up Ebony's body and do another medical examination, only this time more thoroughly.
Graves looked aghast.
You're what?
Going to exhume her.
For God's sake. Why? What's it going to prove that you don't already know?
Why burn her?
I didn't do it!
Graves raised his voice harshly. It was almost a shout.
I didn't bloody well kill her!
How did whoever did kill her burn her like that? Daniel went on. It takes a lot of heat to burn flesh.
Graves's face went white and his eyes hollow. What are you saying?
Daniel leaned forward a bit. If they used something they brought with them and not from the house, it would indicate premeditation. They're saying you quarreled and lost your temper. But if what was used was something in the house already, it could have been on the spur of the moment.
Graves was smiling,
very slightly. Like who? The maid and her lover?